This is Unspoiled, covering Justified, Season 2, Episode 3, The Eye of the Storm. In this episode, what does it mean about you when all it takes to steal your identity is wearing a hat? Welcome to Unspoiled.
Hey now, Raylan is a deep and interesting character with many facets.
And about 40% of those facets are hat related.
Well, granted, but still. Many facets. There's a brim and there's a top part of a hat. I don't know what it's called.
This is riveting radio.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Alan.
And we are at different places in our viewing experience. Alan has seen the whole show, and I am just watching it one by one. I'm an unspoiled beyond this point, so...
You can think of me as Natasha Sherpa through the coal country of Kentucky.
Indeed. Sure.
So today we are talking about The Eye of the Storm. This is written by David Andron, who was a writer in season one. Season two, he's now a supervising producer of the show. And he wrote Hatless before this. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Fathers and Sons, which was the episode right before the finale of season one.
Right. Okay.
And Peter Werner, who also directed Hatless, directed this episode.
Mm, okay. Cool.
So what'd you think of this one?
I liked this one. I mean, Dewey is just such a, like, the guy playing him is so perfect.
Isn't he great?
He's so perfect. Like, he really nails this just smart enough to put together what would seem like a good idea to, like, a seventh grader. And with just the right amount of bravado, but the underlying insecurity shows through almost immediately whenever anybody calls him on anything. He's just really good.
Dewey feels to me a little bit like Wile E. Coyote.
I see that.
He has these plans, and you can absolutely tell that the rocket skates are just going to explode halfway through, but he doesn't want to listen, and you just got to let it happen. Mm-hmm. You just have to let him continually smack into the painting of the desert road or run himself off the cliff, but he'll be back eventually with some other ridiculous thing.
Did you see that thing about somebody painted a tunnel? On a wall somewhere, and somebody drove into it. Oh God, that cracked me up so bad. It looked really real. I mean, I couldn't even blame them. And it was nighttime, I think, when they drove into it too.
That's great. Not for that person, but for the rest of the world. And honestly, isn't that worth it?
I love too that the town was immediately like, "Oh shit, we got to paint over that." Like, they were not going to be paying for any more damages after this.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like this episode a lot also. I think the other two episodes were, like, pretty serious. Mm-hmm. And this one, not that it's not serious, but I just think the presence of Dewey Crow immediately makes an episode more fun.
Yeah, definitely. And as soon as he looks at that hat, I'm like, oh, you are not. And then he does.
And it almost works for about 30 seconds. His plan goes beautifully.
If there hadn't been anybody there to see his face, there's really, it would have just been Raylan's word against theirs, you know?
That's true.
But that's true. He wasn't checking the room well enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can't imagine that him with all of that much, that amount of drugs and potentially that amount of disposable income. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think he would have come to any good end had he actually gotten away with that for any length of time.
That's true, yeah.
So
since they found him at the exact place and Raylan just happened to get there first.
Exactly.
But yeah, let's do this. Let's get started. All right.
So yeah, we open up with Dewey Crow walks into a bar. Stop me if you heard this one. Boyd is drinking, and he and Dewey have a conversation about how many things have changed since Boyd and Dewey last spoke. And Dewey wouldn't be alive if Boyd hadn't chased him away. But then again, Boyd chased him away putting a gun to his head. And so they're not on the best of terms right now.
Yeah.
And Dewey pays for his drink with loose change.
Oh, this was so... And the bartender, like, staring at him. And he's like, it's legal tender. I'm like, oh, my God. Because, you know, I have been on both sides of this. Yeah. I have been the irritated cashier sitting there waiting for somebody to count out 98 cents in change. Mm-hmm. And I have also been the person who was like, oh, shit, that's a dollar more than... Oh, hold on. Yeah, no. So I feel you, Dewey. I do.
And poor Dewey gets approached by Ellen May, the local prostitute, but he is broke and has to turn her down.
Yep.
And Boyd actually owes, he actually offers Dewey money.
Yeah.
And Dewey says no, he's got something lined up.
I'm happy to donate to the cause of your dick. It's so weird.
yeah, it's a little weird. But Boyd and Dewey have a, you know, they have a history.
I mean, I guess if you're not going to let the guy jerk off, you may as well pay for his hookers. Exactly. That's only polite.
Exactly. It is trying to make things right. And Dewey says to Boyd, for a guy who supposedly changed, you sound an awful lot like you always did.
Which is the one really astute thing he says in this episode.
Yeah.
And I love that Boyd just has nothing to say to that. Like, you can see his wheels turning, like, he's like, well, wait, hold on. But Dewey's gotten up and walked away, and he's just like, well, damn. Yep.
Yeah. And we also visit, very briefly, Raylan and Winona. They are on a date way out in the middle of nowhere.
Worst idea ever.
Yeah. And so Raylan is not happy because they drive out as far away as they can possibly get whenever they want to spend time together. And he understood it when Gary didn't know about them. But now that she's divorcing him, this should be okay, right?
Oh, my God. Bless his little heart. Dude, like, the fact that they hadn't even discussed this, I don't even know what to say to the two of them. Like, really, he was just sleeping with her under the assumption that she was leaving, but they never actually said those words. Like, I assumed that there had been a conversation that had taken place long before this, and once he brings it up and she's like, well, you know, I don't know, I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they're at this event where I don't know the person that they're going to see,
Dave Alvin, who Dave, I don't know who he is either, but he's apparently a legit country music star of some kind.
Well, when he's like, you know, he's trying to make the point, like, we went way out of our way, and she's trying to be like, well, this is where he's playing. And I think that he's right that she picked the spot to get out of town. But if you pick some place that's that wide open and well lit and has a well-known personality that's going to attract people also from far away, that just seems like completely kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It misses the point of leaving town. You know what I mean?
Well, I think she wants to have it both ways. I think that's exactly. Raylan wasn't thinking about that because he thought they were cool. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't thinking about that because she wanted to have a genuinely nice night. She just didn't want to do it near anybody who might possibly see them.
I feel like if you're going to try and like go out of town to do something, that's a smart idea, because I've already been mad at them for being as incautious as they've been. But you go somewhere that nobody's going to want to go, like, make a special trip for, because then you guarantee that you're not running into people. But doing this, it just was like, yeah, of course there's somebody there that you know. Of course there is. Like, come on.
Yeah. And Winona says to him, all right, well, maybe I wouldn't be so hesitant to tell the world about us and divorce Gary if I thought you and I could actually be happy together.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe those words came out of her mouth.
I honestly respected the fuck out of the fact that she said that, because that is exactly what she's thinking. And there's, I mean, no matter what she says, you know, that's what's going on. She is like, I just really wanted to have a good time and fuck you for a while and then probably go back to the guy later. And you know, that's like, once you realize that she's not leaving, that's immediately my thought was like, you are just fucking playing Raylan. Oh my God. And I almost respected that because Raylan clearly is not used to it. So haha, a little bit, but saying it out loud, like I, it's like super hurtful, but also you're they should have had this conversation so long ago
that
I almost
there.
Don't even feel like bad. I still really like Winona as a character. Like, she's infuriating in a lot of ways, but I really still like her.
I like her too, and she's completely infuriating, but yeah, that's just a horribly hurtful thing to say. And especially when Raylan's clearly not on the same page she is.
Yeah.
She must know that.
I don't think she, that's the thing is, I don't think she does know that.
Really?
I think that if she really stopped and thought about it, she would start to put it together and realize. But I don't think that she has stopped long enough to think of things from his perspective to even consider where he is on this whole thing, because it just straight up doesn't matter to her. Like, she's so self-absorbed right now in what's going on and just fucking around and having a good time that what he feels, it's like, no, it hasn't even entered her head as relevant. You know what I mean?
I can see that.
So when she says that, like, well, we couldn't even be happy together. I almost, like, because I've been where she is in terms of, like, saying shit that's like so hurtful, but not even realizing it until way later. I have, you know, anybody who listens to the show knows I can be way too blunt, and it's entertaining when you're not on the receiving end of it. But when you are, you just have to stop and look at me and be like, bitch, did that fucking shit just come out of your mouth? And I think that's how she is a little bit, where she's like, I'm going to be straight with you because seems so obvious that why would I beat around the bush when we both totally know? But still, the words are just like, you know, that's a knife in the gut when he's honestly clearly expecting to, like, get back together. And that's just so not on her radar at all. I just,
yeah,
this is what happens when you don't communicate, guys. And you're right, you couldn't be happy together, because look at the two of you. I mean, they just got in a fight over his closet the other day. She's
true.
Not wrong. Like,
yeah. So,
what is it that there's that book that's like a dating advice, and it's called, they call it a breakup because it's broken.
And oh, I haven't heard of that one.
It's not like, you know, there are people who get back together and make it work, and that's fine. But I do really like that sentence, because people often do, like, sort of fool themselves into thinking that this time it'll be different. Why do you really think that, though? What evidence do you base that on? Just that you're happy right now? Because that's not really, you know. And based on what we've seen of the two of them, I think she's 100% correct. It's just...
Oh, I think she's correct. It's just that both of them weren't on the same page
about
it. Like you said, they should have had the conversation a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not that she's wrong. It's that Raylan doesn't know that that's where they are. And maybe he hasn't taken the time to think about it either. I don't know. But yeah, it's still a pretty, like, you just don't say
that's
that.
Cutting. Yeah.
It's cutting. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the look that he has on his face, like, it looks like he got punched. Like, he's, it's just so unexpected. And I know what that's like, to just assume something.
Mm-hmm.
And have it be suddenly so clear. I remember when Brendan and I were in the midst of, like, really struggling with whether we should stay together. We had this specific issue in our relationship that I was under the impression for the past 2 years he had been going to a therapist that he had brought this up. And one day I was like, well, you know, what does your therapist say about this? And he was like, oh, I haven't mentioned it to her yet. And he'd been seeing her 2 years. And I just stopped, like, that was the moment for me where I was like, oh my God, it isn't even enough of an issue to him to bring this up. I thought that was why he was in therapy in the first place, was that he had started because of these issues. And he didn't even talk about it with her. And it was just one of those moments where you're suddenly like, I have been living a parallel existence that doesn't touch yours at all in this respect, you know?
Yeah.
It's really disorienting, and you have to sort of go back and reframe all of your interactions because you were under this impression the whole time, and now you're like, oh, shit, none of that applied at all. And so, yeah, his acting in that moment and that look of just genuine, like, somebody poured a bucket of water over his head and woke him up.
That's exactly it. That's, and then they follow it up with Winona sees that Tim from the office is at the bar also watching the guy.
Yep.
And they say at the same time, Raylan says, let's invite him over. And she says, we should take off.
Oh, my God. Because she had just said, well, I wanted this to be a fun night. I didn't want this. And he's like, well, you wanted to have a fun night. You wanted to have a fun night. So what? What's the big deal? Just bring him over. Why don't we just invite everybody over here so they can all listen to the fact that you don't want to leave your husband? It's just like, oh, Raylan, you need to calm down.
Yeah.
He's getting irate.
It goes so badly.
Oh, guys.
So I
really rarely have patience for this kind of stuff in shows like relationship drama. Usually the people are just so fucking obnoxious that I am like, can we not? But the two of them I feel so connected to in this way that is pretty difficult to accomplish. Okay. I think maybe because Winona was established aside from Raylan.
Okay.
And Ava didn't really get that. You know, we met her in the context of him. And we really only have seen her in that context until this episode and the last one, like seeing her with Boyd.
Well, I think also the show has done a good job with, I'm okay with relationship stuff as long as the show keeps evolving the relationship.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Raylan and Ava's relationship had exactly one dimension.
Yeah, that's true too.
And Winona and Raylan they've been like together. Let's even say like in the flirtiness between the two of them. Let's say it's been 6 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And in those 6 episodes, we have seen their relationship change a lot every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that keeps it interesting and gives you different things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Raylan and Ava, who shack up in like episode 3 and nothing changes until about episode 10.
And they shack up because he's drunk. Like, it felt really just, you know, poor judgment on his part that wound up becoming a thing, which, I mean, that's true enough to life, I guess. Plenty of people's relationships start off in a...
But then they never address the judgment that led to the relationship. Mm-hmm. Again, that's an okay thing to happen as long as you then follow it up with some sort of consequences or reconciliation or... There's none of that. Instead, they just go like, yeah, we were so happy. Now what happened?
Yeah.
But no, that was never the state of your relationship and neither of you ever want to talk about that. It was, yeah, this is far more interesting, although it is equally painful.
And it's interesting in that, like, it's more, because the example I always, you know, think of whatever I happen to be watching at the moment for my main examples. And right now, sure, a show that's doing this badly is Vampire Diaries, which, okay, I'm not caught up on. I've just been watching it on Netflix. And I actually did like those characters and did kind of give a shit, but they really, like, wore it out. And I think it's sort of that back and forth, like, will they, won't they kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I like that this show immediately was like, oh, no, they're fucking.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't really dance around it for very long. And then to have Gary find out right away and to have them have, like, they are really moving it and not, hopefully, I don't know what they do in later seasons, doing this push-pull for too long.
Yeah.
'Cause that's the thing that I think makes me get enraged is when all the drama for the TV show is coming from this, like, artificial back and forth of two people that clearly should not be together, because if they haven't figured it out yet, they aren't gonna.
Yeah, and then the will they or won't they thing just doesn't work for me, because it isn't... It isn't what adults do. Unless you're in high school, I don't buy it as a mm-hmm. plot point.
You know, insert all kinds of, like, external obstacles. Oh, they're engaged now. Oh, they missed each other, and then she went to such and such, and she got captured, and then they couldn't see each other, and then somebody did something. That's the thing with Vampire Diaries. It's like, oh, somebody compelled her, and they messed with her brain. Oh, and then she fell in love with him, but it turns out she wasn't really in love with him. It was just the compulsion, but he feels so betrayed because she went away from him that now he can't forgive her. And then she's going, and then they have a fucking twin who shows up that, it's like, it's ridiculous. So,
it may as well be the Guiding Light.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Sounds like, yeah.
I should watch Guiding Light. Good call.
Ah, thanks. I really think a lot of times, a friend of mine was going through a breakup, and he and his girlfriend, they were broken up to everybody except themselves. They just decided they were on a break or something. Mm-hmm. And she started seeing this other guy she was working at her part-time job with, and so she decided to let him know that because she liked to let him know things like that. And he told her, he said, you know, I know how this is going to be. You're both adults. You're 35 and he's 28 or whatever. You're going to go out 3 or 4 times and you're going to sleep with him. And that's okay. I understand that. We're on a break. And he wasn't really okay with it, but you know, and she took horrible offense to the idea that she might do that after a couple of dates. And he's like, no, we're adults. This is the way that this works. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to be a lot of dancing around. It's not going to be dating for 6 months before you finally take the next step.
He isn't going to show up in his handsome coach and just drive her around the town and then drop her back off at her front door.
Yeah, and she wanted to present it as like, yes, he's courting me and who knows whether that could lead. And he's like, no, you're going to go out a couple of times and you're going to have sex. I understand that that's the way that this happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what adult relationships are like. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to overgeneralize, but it's generally speaking true.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that the show treats the adults like adults.
Yes.
Even when they're acting irrationally or stupidly. All right. So,
anyway, we spent a lot of time on that, but I really like it, so I'm fine with it.
No, I do too. I do too.
So, okay. We then go back to Dewey, who is riding on a church bus.
Oh, I was not. I was so mystified. Right? I didn't know about oxybuses, which is apparently such a thing that they have that name.
Right.
And when I saw that he was on a chirp, I was just like, what? Wait, I was so confused. Once we figure it out, I'm like, oh, now it all makes sense. But I really had no idea what was happening for a second.
Yeah, I was glad they didn't like try to drag that mystery out for too long.
Yeah.
Because I had never heard of oxybuses either. But it makes a whole lot more sense than Dewey is just hopping a ride on church bus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they get stopped. There's a bridge out. There's these two guys, Cutter and Elrod. We find out their names are later. And they shoot a guy in the head and take a bag full of pills.
Yeah.
And they say, it's not Christmas. Come early.
The guy that they shoot in the head splatters all over the bus driver, too. And it's gruesome.
That's pretty gruesome is exactly the right word. Ugh. Yeah. And that brings us back to Art's office.
Mm-hmm.
And we follow up really briefly with the end of last episode. The AUSA determined that the shooting of Jess Timmons was justified.
Hey!
And Tim leaves, and Art stops and says, Raylan, do I need to be concerned?
Oh my god, I fucking love this so much.
And they both look out at Tim, and Raylan starts trying to make excuses for he and Winona, and Art has no idea what he is talking about.
Oh my god.
He's concerned that Tim just killed a person, and maybe we should keep an eye on him to make sure that he's all right.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the cat's out of the bag,
then he's starting to fucking brainstorm.
It could be Rachel. Are you sleeping with Rachel?
Oh man. And I I figured it out. And when he says Winona, Raylan has zero poker face. Holy shit.
No, not at all. And I thought sleeping with a witness was stupid.
I love him fucking. He giggles. He straight up is like, hee hee hee. Oh my god. My dad used to giggle like that. And it was always when he was like feeling really smug. Oh, I loved it so much. I love Art. Oh, I think he might be my very favorite.
Absolutely. Well, Art is. Anytime Art. More Art is good for an episode.
Yes.
That he is such a joy to watch him just hate Raylan so much. And at the same time, clearly, you know, he's a better father figure than Arlo. But
straight.
He just loves watching Raylan make a mess of things. So, yeah, that happens. And then he pulls him back one more time. He gives Raylan the news of the bus, and they explain what an oxybus is.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it was an oxybus that was hit by a separate group of criminals, and it sounds an awful lot like Boyd Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
But Boyd is working in the mines.
Yeah, Boyd is... this whole thing with his coworker is the most uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He should not be among mixed company. He should be doing some kind of job that keeps him locked alone in a closet all day. Like a mail room or something. You know what I mean?
Do you think Boyd would do well alone with his own thoughts like that, though?
I think he is alone with his own thoughts right now. Like, he is just trying to keep everyone out so hard. And I kind of feel...
It's true.
I feel like he... It might not be healthy for a long time, but I do feel like he needs it.
Yeah.
You know?
He's definitely struggling with who he is and what his place in the world is right mm-hmm. now. But when we meet him here, he is getting harassed by one of his coworkers, and he is quote-unquote rescued by Kyle.
Yeah. This is like that fucking The Wire, the way that McNulty and Bunk hit on women.
Oh, yeah.
They have yes. Bunk come over and be all drunk and disgusting, and McNulty step in. Is he bothering you? Fucking classic.
Yes. And Kyle tries to invite Boyd out to a drink, but Boyd prefers to drink alone.
Mm-hmm. And there is... Okay, real quick. This yeah. moment where he's like, you know, why don't you come with me for a drink? And Boyd says, no offense meant, but I prefer to drink alone. I watched Fear the Walking Dead today, which is pretty terrible. Okay. I really like the first season, second season, not so much. Mm-hmm. But there's a great moment where... There's a dude who has a history of guerrilla warfare in South America who okay. is kind of facing off with a kid who was trying to act tough. And the kid says all kinds of, you should be scared of me because I'm going to do this and that. And he says to the kid, you know, I've known a lot of men in my life who inspired fear. And you know what they all had in common? None of them said how fearful they were. And it really, like, just, it's sort of like the same thing as Tywin Lannister being like, a man who has to say, I am the king is no true king.
He's not the king. Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you have to talk about how scary you are, then you're not. And Boyd here is fucking scary. And this guy is so not, like, picking up on that. And it's so frustrating to watch. I'm like, do you not see how this... Boyd's acting in this. He is so good at nailing that the depths of this depression where you are basically a black hole in the room.
Yeah.
And you will suck all of the energy and happiness out of it. And this guy is dancing around him, poking at him, like Theon with Roose, you know, trying to act like he's going to be his buddy. And I'm like, are you, like, talking to the same human being that I'm seeing right now? Because this man is not here for your fucking shit at all. And you just don't seem to be reading the room. The fact that he comes and fucking sits next to him later with no invitation, I was just like, okay, you know what, man? Whatever happens to you, you fucking deserve.
This is a guy who clearly heard the legends of Crowder's Commandos back at whatever bar he used to frequent
mm-hmm.
and decided he needs to go find this guy. And regardless of the mood this guy was in, he can't see that. Mm-hmm. All he sees is this legendary neo-Nazi figure that a Boyd apparently was. And we don't ever really see that from him, aside from the very, very first episode.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly this guy has a very specific image of who Boyd is. And he is, like you said, has no ability to read a room.
And what's sort of funny about it is, like, he obviously is looking at it in this hero worship sort of comic book kind of way. Because when you stop to think about what a person would actually have to be like in order to be the legend this guy thinks he is... That's not somebody that you would approach this way either. So Boyd isn't who this guy thinks anymore. But even if he were, approaching him this way would not be the way to go. Like, yeah. He shot somebody in the back of the head for on suspicion that the guy was a setup. And you're just going to, like, this dude is clearly just, like, green, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's really, he thinks he's so clever with that fucking rescue thing, too. He really thinks he got one over on him or something. It's just like, oh, man.
Yeah. So we will come back to Kyle in a little while. Now, Raylan is exploring the abandoned church bus with Trooper Tom Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
And Chief Doyle Bennett, arrives on the scene.
Yeah, this guy is...
Yeah, last time we saw Doyle, you weren't quite sure where he stood in relationship to everything else. This episode removes all doubt.
Yeah, man, he is a bad egg.
He is. And he just lets them know. I know you guys don't think much of local law enforcement. You let me know if you've seen anything.
Yeah, let me know if you've seen anything that could implicate my brother or family so I could take care of it before you take care of it.
Yeah. And he is the one who spills the beans to Raylan that Boyd Crowder is staying with Ava.
Yeah, that was another thing. We don't even see, like, what side of the law he's on here, but as soon as he does that, I'm like, oh, okay, you're kind of a fuckboy. Like, that, you just did that to throw him off a little bit. There was no reason for that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it, ostensibly there was, because Raylan's going to try and find him to question him. So, sure, but that, you know, you were going to find a way to fit that shit into the conversation, whether or not Boyd came up, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. he knew that would, like you said, throw Raylan off a little bit. That would put him off on the wrong trail, yes, but even more so than that, it would give him, it would just put him off his game.
Yeah.
And Raylan has a Hannibal level of no reaction to that. Where he just has like this little, almost like a smirky little, like.
He almost smiles like, no shit. You know?
I said it's a great bit of facial acting because he outwardly doesn't react at all, and yet somehow you see him reacting all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh man, it is so weird though, isn't it? I'm really liking Ava a lot more now that she's, you know, existing on her own.
Yeah.
Recognizance, I guess, is the way I want to say that.
Yes.
But the arrangement that she and Boyd have set up is, I would love to be like inside that house and see how frequently Boyd just basically backs off, because he's obviously got like no energy to put into arguing with her at the moment. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, when she starts to sense that, how she might just be like pushing him around because she's like, you know what? I don't like you. I'm not really happy about you being here. I need the money, but I'm not concerned about you being happy or anything. And just doing little things like moving all of his stuff into like one tiny cabinet that's really hard to reach in the kitchen. Or, like, you know, putting his toothbrush in, like, the hall closet every time that he's done using it so that he has to, like, go get it to brush it. Just
as passive-aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be really funny and, you know, it'd be the kind of thing he would just put up with at the moment because he's just like, whatever, life is meaningless. But it would be very satisfying for her in a small way.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think we have not seen the inside of that house with the two of them at this point, but yeah, that is exactly the way that she would be taking out all of her anger and frustration and whatever on Boyd and his complete inability, not even inability to fight back, but his disinterest in fighting back.
He buys a box of donuts and he gets up in the morning and she ate all them donuts. And she's just got powdered sugar around her mouth like, oh, that's so weird. Where'd that go? Anyway, I'm gonna write that script.
Ava tapes down the center of the room so that way Boyd stay on his side, she stay on her side.
She tapes down the center of the room, but then she starts putting her stuff on his side.
Yeah,
just like it's no, that tape's for you. I get to do whatever I want.
So, before Raylan confronts Ava and Boyd. Dewey confronts Boyd. Dewey drives up to the house, forgets to put the car in park, and accuses Boyd of cutting in on his action.
Oh, and Dewey. That car rolling back was classic.
Yes.
I don't know if that was in the script or not, but it's really good.
It's a great Dewey moment because he is so full of just, he is so pissed off and he is so righteously angry.
Yep.
And he can't get out of the car because suddenly he forgot to do something really, really silly. And Ava comes out and sees Dewey and tells Boyd he has 15 minutes to get Dewey off of her property.
Mm-hmm. And no, Boyd, she says 2 minutes.
Does she?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, my wiki sucks.
she's like, you have 2 minutes to get him out of here. And I was like, well, damn, because that just seemed like so not enough time.
But Boyd is totally honest with him. He says, I had no hand in this. Mm-hmm. And Dewey has a plan. He says, well, fine, if you don't own up to it, I don't care. He is going to go steal back the oxy from the robbers. And Boyd tries to stop him and says, if you steal this from them, they are going to be pissed at you. Mm-hmm. And the original people who lost the drugs are going to be pissed at you.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop.
Mm-hmm.
And Dewey does not hear. He says, you think I'm stupid, but I ain't.
Oh, my God. And I love how he says, you think I'm stupid. And he stops like he didn't think about how he was going to finish this sentence. And then he just, the best he can come up with is, but I ain't. And I'm like, oh, man, that was not effective.
No.
And I love, too, when he's like, well, why should I believe you when Boyle says I had no hand in this? And Boyle doesn't answer him because he knows there's really nothing there's no reason for him to believe him. It's just like.
Hey, Boyd, by the way, you said Boyle again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep doing that. I've been watching too much Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Ah, okay.
You gotta watch that show, dude. It's so good.
I'll get there.
Boyle could not be a more different character than Boyd, though. So okay. It's kind of amusing now that I'm reframing that in my head. Anyway.
But yeah, exactly. Boyd knows there's nothing he can tell him other than the truth. I didn't have anything to do with it.
Yep.
But Dewey does not want to hear it. He is going and getting back his drugs so he can get his $200.
And you know, it really is kind of like, do you think that somebody who, like, busts in and takes this isn't expecting whoever lost it to come back after them? Like, that's how this shit works, right? Yeah. But he's just so, like, oh, I'm going to take them completely by surprise. And, I mean, he does initially, but he's not fucking smart about it. When you have that kind of surprise, yeah, you have to like bounce, and he wants to sit around and jerk off or not.
Yeah.
That's his fatal flaw is these lovely ladies.
Yes. Loves his prostitutes a little too much.
Yep.
Poor Dewey. So Dewey leaves. We go to commercial, we come back, so time has passed. Raylan comes up to Ava's front door, and he is here for Boyd, and he is here on business. And Ava asks him, are you here to talk to Boyd, or do you want to ask me why he's living at my house?
I really wish that she hadn't, because it just makes her seem so petty. Like, it feels totally in character, but I was just like, oh, Ava, you just sound like a teenage girl going like, oh, well, you know, he asked me to prom. I might go with him because nobody else has asked me. So I don't know. You know, just like, lady, you're not fooling anybody. Knock it off.
And she doesn't even ask. She doesn't even wait for Raylan to answer because she wants to tell him so badly for why Boyd is living there.
Yeah.
Boyd helps out with the rent. He's the only kin she has left.
Mm-hmm.
And then Raylan explains about the robbery and Ava is, she's all too willing to believe that Boyd had something to do with this, because why wouldn't you believe that?
Yep.
But she mentions Dewey and then tells Raylan that he can find Boyd at Audrey's, which is the bar that they go to.
Yeah. /whorehouse.
Well, no, this bar is the, this is a different bar. The whorehouse bar is a different one, I think.
Really? I thought it was Audrey's.
Hey. I could be mistaken, but I don't think so, because I think the bar with
okay,
I think the bar that has Ellen May and the other girls is the one that used to be Johnny's bar last season.
I got nothing. Oh, well, doesn't really matter.
It doesn't. For our purposes right now, it does not matter. Okay. So Raylan is off to find Boyd and or Dewey, and Dewey is trying to buy a ski mask.
This kid. Oh, my God.
And they don't have one at the convenience store, because in Kentucky, there isn't a lot of skiing.
The fucking long-suffering shop owner, yeah. Who was just like, man, I don't know if you have looked around, but we don't exactly get a lot of snow or anything related to what you're talking about. Then he's like, a hockey mask, and I'm like, dude, did you fucking hear anything?
Well, I love, before that, he asked him, what do you want a ski mask for? And he says, what are you, the ski mask police?
Just get a beanie and cut holes in it, you dumb shit. God.
And yeah, and he tells Dewey, well, I'm closing up in 2 minutes, so you go find yourself something.
And he sees that and hat.
He sees big white cowboy hat.
And I'm thinking, no. What? Wait, what is he? What? And that's exactly what he does.
Uh-huh.
He's a nut.
Yeah. So while Dewey is buying his cowboy hat, Raylan talks to Boyd at Audrey's. And he sits down next to his back at Audrey's. I feel like I'm 13 again.
Late bloomer, were ya? Yeah. Can't keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
And, well, see, this is why I thought it was a whorehouse.
Because he's 13 again? Oh.
No, because when she says, Audrey's, I bet you lost your virginity there.
Oh, you know.
And then he sits down, he's like, it makes me feel like I'm 13 again. And, like, he doesn't say shit to her when she says, I bet you lost your virginity there. So I think she's 100% right.
Yeah, you could be, maybe they are the same bar. You could be right. You could be right.
His dad definitely seems like the type to bring his 13-year-old son there with a C note and be like, have fun.
you might be right. I'll have to investigate or just pay more attention. Raylan talks to Boyd about the Oxybus hijacking.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of comes down to Boyd telling him, will you believe my answer?
Yeah.
And Raylan says, well, let's see. So he says, no, Raylan, I had nothing to do with the bus being robbed. And Raylan says, okay.
I really like that there's a distinct difference between the bullshit that he was shoveling in the first season and mm-hmm. the way, like, because he would, you know, he tried to like use really flowery language to say things that didn't need it. Mm-hmm. But this one, when he's like, well, actually, when we come right down to it, the actual question is, and I was about to be like, oh, brother. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, would you believe my answer anyway? And I was like, oh shit, that is kind of the actual question. So I like the fact that it feels like he's really, you know, kind of growing out of the, I don't even want to say growing out of the bullshit, but just like, again, doesn't have the fucking energy for it, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. No, I just wanted my drink. Can we not?
I love to watch Boyd struggle with this,
mm-hmm.
with this idea of just leave me alone and let me wallow in my misery and mm-hmm. do my boring ass job. And because I don't even get the impression he enjoys blowing things up right now.
No. It's like I was good at this, so I guess.
Right.
But it's not like, you know, I finally figured out a way to take my passion and turn it into a career.
Exactly.
Not at all.
And, I mean, like I said last season, I love Boyd when he sermonizes and when he's all excited. And he's not here for this right now. He and Raylan, okay, Raylan leaves and he leaves Boyd his card, which he then tears up. And Dewey, now has donned his hat, breaks into the house with the
drug thieves, and he does his best Raylan impression, firing off his gun.
Shooting it up like a motherfucker.
I am Federal Marshal Raylan Givens, and Raylan Givens does not care what if you... Oh my God. Just goes on. How many times can he say Raylan Givens in the span of, you know, four sentences?
I was dying. From beginning to end, the whole thing is just so classic.
Oh, it's hysterical.
I loved it so much. He is such a dum-dum. Bless his heart.
To his credit, like you said, he catches them by surprise. Mm-hmm. He gets the drugs. And if that girl was not there, all they would know is that Raylan Givens broke in their house, shot up their room, and stole their drugs.
Yep.
But there is a woman in the back who watches him leave, and Dewey never sees her.
Yep. Oh, man. Later on, is this the man you saw? Oh, no.
Yes.
He slams the door in her face, and I'm like, I bet she's like, wait, no, come back.
Yeah. And that is our very next scene. It is my favorite scene in the episode, honestly, is Raylan and Doyle. Talking about Raylan's looking, and Doyle's already talked to her, and she finds all about Federal Marshal Raylan Givens taking the drugs, and he starts talking to him in like code.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Raylan ain't the man I thought he was. Maybe he ain't the man we all think he is. Sometimes a man does a thing, and some people see it as wrong, and some people don't see it that way, and some people might be able to help that man provided he returns the favor later on.
Oh my God. I was just trying to, stop and listen to this as if I had no context, because I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But listening when you have no clue that the idea is that Raylan took it, how fucking crazy he must sound. I love how Raylan's just like, are you speaking in, what does he say? Martian?
Are you speaking Martian, Doyle? Yeah, and exactly, the witness sees him and goes, oh, no, 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 slams the door in her face.
He is so rude to her.
And then he turns back to him and goes, what was all that shit you were just saying?
He's like, oh, nothing, shit, what?
Yeah, just feeling you out. Mm-hmm. And they go back to her, and then she describes the assailant. It's talking about how he was way shorter, and he had some sort of neck tattoo, and he was talking about poaching gators.
Yep. And she's like, and I remember that because it didn't make no sense, slam.
Slam.
He's like, dude, fucking stop it. You're just being really rude.
Yeah, she probably is the most straightforwardly helpful person in the entire episode.
She is. He's just so fucking, he's so like annoyed at this whole, oh man, he's such a dick. I kind of want him to run into her later. And for her to just, like, throw it in his face. Like, she has information again. But,
yeah, right.
And he needs her. And she's like, no, you were a straight dick to me. Bye. I would enjoy it.
Yeah, Raylan has burned the CI. So we go to Dewey, who comes back to the bar. And boy, is there drinking by himself. And Dewey is over the moon. He goes and finds Ellen May, says, go find a friend.
Oh my God.
And she asks, light or dark? And Dewey's kind of dumbstruck by the question.
Yeah, he stops and stares at her like he doesn't even know how, like... And I'm like, did you forget that he has a swastika on his chest?
Hair, Dewey.
Yeah, I'm like, I would be real surprised if this place had a black prostitute. I don't feel like there's a black person within 50 miles except for that other marshal.
That is true. But he's so happy he goes to Boyd and gushes about what he did. And again, Boyd is just, if you had any smarts, you would get in your car and start driving until you see the Everglades.
He does that thing where he sits down and he's like all bouncy waiting for Boyd to ask him. And Boyd's just like, no, I'm not playing this game. And he's like, don't you even want to ask? Clearly he doesn't, because he didn't. Dude.
But it's the same thing. He can't wait to tell somebody about this thing that he did that he's not supposed to tell anybody about, because Raylan Givens.
Yep.
And Dewey's like, I think you're just mad that I had the stones to do this thing and you didn't.
Oh, I knew he was going to say that, too.
Yeah.
I was like, he's just going to think it's sour grapes.
And Boyd just tells him, you chose your path. good luck to you, son, and he leaves.
Yep.
And then he makes a phone call he never thought he would make. He calls Raylan.
It's really kind of sweet.
It is.
You know, he's doing it because he's straight up concerned. He's like, this kid is going to die.
Yeah.
So I thought it was sort of adorable.
It is. Well, and again, it speaks volumes as to where Boyd is. Mm-hmm. He is so far beyond, am I a good guy? Am I a bad guy? I don't know. But I do see this person who's about to get himself killed.
Mm-hmm. It's like he feels so guilty about the deaths of these other people that he sort of feels like are on his head.
Yeah.
That he is trying, if he can make any difference, to keep people alive, he's going to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I think if Dewey were to die here, that Boyd would feel responsible for that.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really, I mean, it's really not fair for him to feel that way, because Dewey is being, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do. But yeah, there is something he can do, so he's not wrong. It's just, people make their own damn choices, too, so you know.
Right. But Raylan shows up, and he finds Dewey back in the trailer with Ellen May and the blonde girl. And Dewey is on the bed in his underwear and his cowboy boots.
Oh my god, this guy. I can't even. That's just about the prettiest thing I've ever seen.
Go ahead and kiss some more so I can watch.
Oh, man.
And the two girls are just high as hell.
Yeah, woof. They acted really well. Like, sometimes when people try and play high, it feels so corny. But they had just enough of, like, their shit together, and then it would leak out here and there, and I was like, ew, this is unpleasant.
And I love, Raylan comes in, and he announces himself as Deputy Marshal Raylan Givens, and LMA points at him and goes, another one!
Yes! Oh my god, I love that so much. Because I don't think he expected that. He looks genuinely taken aback, like, wait, you're still saying that? Oh, I love that. I didn't expect it either. You know, I'm thinking you just did that for the bust. Why are you going to bother in here? But why not, I guess.
And Dewey claims he was seizing the pills for Raylan because he was deputized before.
This was genius.
Kind of, sort of.
I was genuinely like, well, shit, Dewey. Well, that is, done.
That's pretty, that's pretty much, there's a lot of forethought for Dewey considering he's Dewey.
Yeah. It was just, you know, it's not going to work. It doesn't mean anything, but it's still, you know, good memory on you.
Yeah, the point you do. And I love when Raylan tells he shoos the girls away. Dewey asks for 5 minutes.
Oh my god!
Like, no,
he just says really, like, looks at him, and I like that really can be interpreted in a myriad of ways.
Yeah,
both,
right.
Both just like, really, you're going to ask me that, but also, just 5 minutes? Really? Like.
And the girls scamper off, and I love, he tells Dewey to get dressed, and in order for him to put his pants on, he's got to take his cowboy boots off.
Yes.
Which means when he got in there, he got undressed and then put his boots back on.
Yep. Guys don't appreciate how much women have to deal with this kind of shit when we wear fancy lingerie.
You know, I imagine you're right.
That's something that I notice a lot in porn, is that women will have put on their lingerie in a different way than you normally do in order to make it, like, so that you don't have to disassemble everything to get the key pieces off. Because if they were wearing it the way you're supposed to wear it, all they would be able to do is pull those panties to the side. Like, there's just, otherwise, there's no point in her wearing that shit because she just has to take it all off. But, yeah. Trying to have sex in costumes is trickier than people think.
Yeah, especially depends on the costumes, I imagine. Lots of buckles and
if you're into that steampunk thing, yeah.
If you're, yes, right. I was thinking pilgrims for some weird reason. I don't know where that came from.
It's a whole other level of kink. All right.
And this bit of the scene finishes with Raylan saying, I'm sorry, Dewey. Are you worried about looking like less of a man? Because I believe that ship has already sailed.
Oh, he looks so crestfallen.
Raylan just delights in torturing Dewey.
I feel like, and he makes himself such a target. Like, how is he supposed to resist that?
Exactly. So just then, the two drug smugglers, Cutter and Elrod, or the drug thieves, they show up. Raylan comes out and says, "Hold on, I'm Deputy Marshal Raylan Givens.
Oh, my God. Why did he leave with that? I'm not falling
for that shit again." They open fire.
Oh, man. He ducks and has this look on his face like, oh.
Yeah.
He just figured it out.
And he starts to talk them down. Doesn't get very far, but he starts to. And then Doyle appears with his gun out.
Yep.
And he gets Cutter and Elrod to lower their weapons. And then Cutter confesses that it was Dickie who hired them to steal the Oxy.
Yep.
And so Doyle shoots them both. And he's like, "I guess they must have thought I was kidding."
Yo.
Yeah. Scumbag Doyle.
This was ugly. I mean, it's, first of all, they picked a great actor because Doyle has this face that makes you want to trust him. You know that kind of face?
It's he's got enough like boyishness to it.
Yeah, it's like it feels like he's being really open and genuine. So it's really like when he did this, I already, from the way that he had handled Raylan earlier, figured, okay, he's a bad one. But you think that he's shady, occasionally covering some shit up. He straight up murdered two people and has zero compunction about it. Like, does not seem to fucking lose a wink of sleep over it.
Yeah, Doyle is not an ally in this.
It is really like, he's good at being the sketchy dude and also making it feel like, oh, I understand why people trust this guy. Because that's something, you know, so many, especially movies, love to cast the guy where you're like, there's the bad guy.
Yeah.
He's got a scar. Boom. Like, whatever. And you always wonder, why is anyone ever on this dude's side? He's so clearly a douchebag. And this, it's like, no, I would get it. Raylan seems to be suspicious.
But Raylan and his family have a history.
Yeah, so he's like, yeah, I'm not going to touch that, actually.
And it does sort of, you know, and if you didn't know already, it does reframe the idea, like, this guy is in charge of where his mother is dealing drugs and has her own little pot empire. So that guy is the law, and he just had no problem gunning down two people who would have potentially jeopardized his brothers.
And also, I'm sure Raylan is relieved that these two dudes are dead, but he was not the one who shot them.
Yes.
But yeah. I think that maybe not even just the fact that this guy, you know, that it feels a little bit sudden and convenient and, oh, I guess they thought I was kidding. But the fact that he seems so cavalier about it afterwards, where we see Raylan's other partner, whose name I forgot, who killed somebody.
Tim.
Yeah. Being, you know, obviously a little bit withdrawn.
Yeah.
It feels different, their attitudes. And I feel like that's something that he is going to, like, take note of. It might not be a big deal, but still, when you can tell somebody's almost, like, used to this, that says something.
I mean, in his mind, he's like, he is protecting his family.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, that is totally okay. Even last year with the Crowders, you know, you talked about just how amoral they were. There was still, you know, when Johnny had to go beat down Boyd, after one or two punches, he was just like, am I done now?
Mm-hmm.
Can I stop? And Bo was like, no, you keep going on that. There was still that hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just like, no, I am protecting my brothers. That means you die.
Mm-hmm.
Cold blood. So yeah, Doyle sucks. And he's creepy.
And I feel like bad because I'm just realizing Doyle, Boyd, Bo. Why do they have to make all these names sound so similar?
Kentucky, man. Kentucky.
It's killing me. That this guy who told him, when he's like, who hired you, probably thought telling him would get him out of it somehow.
I bet you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why he gave it up so easily.
Yeah, he gives it up pretty easily. I didn't really think about that, but you're right. He does just sort of go like, oh, it was your brother. So,
yikes.
We're cool, right?
That's a bummer.
Right? Yeah. And speaking of Doyle's brothers, we go back to Dickie and Coover.
These two are such a mess.
They are. They are. And they are doing whatever the fuck you do when you're junky hillbillies in a trailer.
I always forget about the word hillbilly, but it is such a great word.
Isn't it a great word?
It is. Oh, man.
I love the word hillbilly. I never get to use it except when I'm talking about professional wrestling or Justified.
Redneck is one that I hear out here a lot. But, yeah, but it doesn't quite get it across. Redneck feels more like...
It's... Well, I mean, honestly, like, the rednecks have taken it back. They've empowered that word.
Okay.
And hillbilly is still, like, goofy bumpkin.
Yeah, and I feel like redneck sounds like somebody who, like, is out working all the time. Whereas hillbilly feels like somebody who's like this. Like, kind of sitting around jerking off, and you're like, what is... How do you exist? Like, a Kramer from Seinfeld. But, yeah, his... The guy who plays Coover, too, he is... Looks so much like a dude who played a troll on Grimm. And he was in a couple other things, and he often plays things like trolls because he's got this heavy brow ridge. Looks so much like him that I almost think that they might be related. And I can't... Like, every time he's on camera, I just want him to just be like... just, like, grunt. He doesn't even look like he would be able to form sentences. This, like, anger that he has on his face the minute the phone rings for no reason. Like, you know, the way that a dog would be pissed off if you woke him up.
Yeah. Coover is... well, I liked, you know, Coover... We talked about it in the other episode as it almost being an adjective to describe somebody. Like, it sounds like a dirty word.
Fucking Coover.
Exactly. And I think, and he plays it like his name is a dirty word.
We don't say the C word here.
And he, all three of the brothers, and the mom too. I mean, most of the actors on this show, but the three of them are great at just playing different levels of just filthy creepy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And Coover in particular does a great job of just being awful for the sake of being awful.
The word. TM.
Yes. So, but Dickie and Goober are sitting around wondering what happened to their Oxy, and Dickie's cell phone goes off and it plays Dixieland.
Oh my god, I was crying.
And it feels so perfect. I also forgot that they have technology like cell phones.
Right.
Like, we see Raylan and the Marshals on phones all the time.
I'm expecting them to pick up tin can.
Yeah.
Like, hello?
Boyd is a stylish enough guy where I'm like, okay, yeah, Boyd has a cell phone, or Boyd can be stylish when he wants to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these guys, exactly. There should be tin cans. I would say smoke signals, but they would probably go and murder people who use smoke signals.
Probably.
There's, yeah, the idea of him having a cell phone and the fact that it sings Dixie is just awesome.
But it's Doyle. They're expecting it to be Cutter and Elrod, but it's Doyle and he is pissed.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. He is right outside the door. Oh, my God. Yes. And he chucks that phone at them. I was cracking up at this whole entrance and the way he handled this. He is just like, because I forgot that was the other guy's phone who's dead. Mm. So I'm like, why did he throw his phone? That was just not smart. And then I realized, like, oh, that's not his. Whatever. But yeah, he has zero fucking patience. Get out here. Why? Because it smells like pot and piss in here.
And Doyle he's pissed, not just because it caused this incident, but that bus belonged to the Dixie Mafia. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be wondering what the hell happened to their drugs. And Dickie says, well, I'm not afraid of Frankfurt. And Doyle comes back with, well, what about Mama? Are you afraid of Mama?
Yeah.
And they are. They are, with good cause.
You had best be, because that woman does not play.
Mm-hmm. Lord. And again, if there was any doubt, Doyle says that if they have any more bright ideas, they come to him first. So he has no problem not just getting his hands dirty in protection, but...
helping them facilitate something that goes smoothly.
Let's make you smarter criminals.
Yep. And, smarter, not harder, guys.
Yes.
Man. I really did, though, love this, like, confrontation. And just how much they wilted immediately when he mentions Mama.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like, oh.
So they are, for the time being, they're chastened.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to Raylan, who then stops back by Ava's to let her know that Boyd isn't responsible for the robbery.
He felt the need to show up in person for this.
Yes. And they have this conversation again about her living with Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
And among other things, he accuses her of letting Boyd live with her to get back at Raylan.
Why did he have to play into her shit?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's like exactly what she would have wanted him to say yesterday. I'm saying yesterday in terms of the show.
Yes.
I was just like so mad at him for giving her the satisfaction because she was obviously needling him and he just totally went for it.
He has a bad habit of that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's entirely wrong. I'm sure there was a little part of her that was like, oh, he's going to fucking love this.
It makes me wonder. Cause the way she deals with him is, I think the two of them are, Ava and Boyd, that is.
Mm-hmm.
They have a really interesting relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
Now. But I do wonder if getting back at Raylan is just a side benefit or if it was more of a catalyst.
I think of it as a side benefit and just... I feel like part of why she just tells him right away when he shows up is she's been waiting for him to find out for so long that this is where he's living now.
Oh,
that,
totally.
You know, that it's just like once he shows up, she just has to like pour out.
She doesn't even wait for him to ask.
To ask, questions. Yeah. She
says, is that why you're here? Well, if it is, let me just explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, she absolutely has been waiting for this moment. But I think your initial suspicion that, like, yeah, they went through some shit, and in that moment, she was feeling charitable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is way more likely. But I think now that she's had time to stew on it, the idea of using it to get under Raylan's skin is...
delightful.
Way too attractive. Yeah. But I like when Raylan talks about Boyd. And he says, given your arrangement, I don't want you to throw him out because of something I said. I want you to throw him out because he's Boyd Crowder.
Come on, dude.
Come on. But I like after that, when talking about Boyd, he says he wants to change. And I might buy that he wants to. But believing that shit will get me killed. And I think that's pretty fair. I think that explains a lot about his attitude towards Boyd over the last couple episodes.
I think it's a little bit of pot calling the kettle black on this, Raylan. Trying to be all... Well, I think he wants to do better and be better, but, you know, that's going to endanger people. Oh, you think?
Okay.
Raylan trigger-happy fucking Givens? Jesus Christ. Listen to your damn self.
He hasn't killed anybody in 3 episodes.
He's only been around when people have gotten killed. Not the same.
Exactly. Total coincidence. No, I hadn't actually considered it that way. But that makes way too much sense for it to not be at least somewhat true.
I mean, I get where he's coming from. It's just, it really doesn't feel genuine. You know, I'm not buying it.
Okay.
Put it back on the shelf, Raylan.
And eventually Ava tells him to fuck off by saying, you are choosing not to be a part of my life, so you don't get to have a say on how I live it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
She is 100% correct.
She is. And then our final scene, we come back to Boyd and Kyle. And this is Kyle, loving on Crowder's commandos.
Boyd, what happened?
You and me are the same. And that he's killed people just like Boyd. Sometimes people are disposable, he says.
Oh my god, he is a mess.
And Boyd leaves, and Kyle follows him out, and then he goes for a headlock car ride.
This shit. Kyle. Dude. Buddy. Read the room.
Yeah.
Like, how many ways can this man tell you that he is not interested? And you know he's a dangerous person. And you're talking about fucking disposable people. The red shirtiest red shirt talking about this shit. And I'm just sitting there like, how are you not seeing the signs? And then I was really waiting for him to like be splattered all over the road.
Yeah.
When he gets up at the end, I was like, well, thank God, but I really wasn't expecting him to be okay.
Well, you know, I remembered this part. I forgot how violent it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it, and I'm watching him, you know, again, he's got the headlock, and Boyd's going at like 40 miles an hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. His feet are dragging on the road. And I'm watching it going like, this is some impressive stunt work. He looks really close to those tires.
Yeah.
And then he lets him go, and I forgot that he goes flying.
Yeah, he does like a full somersault.
Yeah. It is really, really painful looking.
And, the way that, like, Boyd, like, screams when he does it.
It's the most emotional we have seen him in, you know, since the finale.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe in the whole show, it's the most emotional we've seen him. Just, yeah, it just clearly he has just embraced something that he was trying to deny was there.
Oh, man. He needs to hurt people. He seems just like that kind of person, man. That's no good.
And then as soon as he stopped, he looks horrified at what he just did.
And he has to, like, wait and see that he's okay and getting up.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And I wonder what would have happened if Kyle was dead.
I think he would have turned himself in.
I was trying to think if he would have turned himself in, or maybe he would have tried to commit suicide, or if he would have, like, I think he would have taken that so completely personally that I think, yeah, but I definitely agree. Yeah. He would have turned himself in, but it's a really terrifying moment just for Boyd to be that, like, clearly he's fighting something.
Yeah. Yep. He is. It's really like, it's hard to watch. And the way that he screams is just so primal and like from the gut. This is something that I always appreciate when people scream on screen and do it well, because it's really common, especially when it's dudes, for them to try and make their scream sound manly somehow. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it's not like if you're being hurt, chances are you're not caring about that at that moment. And so when dudes in movies and stuff scream and they do like high pitched, like fucking don't care kind of screams, that like hits me.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was more of a growl, but it felt so like visceral.
Yes.
That
came from deep, deep inside.
Yeah.
And there's no pretense to that.
Mm-mm.
And there's no, like, that scream wasn't for anybody.
Yeah.
And it is, and I love they have that song playing behind it, The Devil's at the Wheel, or The Devil Takes the Wheel. And, and so he stops and he looks at Kyle, and Kyle starts to get up, and so Boyd just keeps driving.
He's, like, cradling his arm, which is probably broken.
Probably.
Oy. Well, now you know what it's like to fuck with a psychopath, Kyle.
Right.
So maybe don't do that again. But I wouldn't be surprised if this asshole thinks that he's going to try and get revenge or something, because he's that stupid and obviously has an enormous ego for no good reason.
He definitely does. And they do work together.
Yo, people, like, there are some people who have a big ego where you're like, yeah, I could kind of see why. And then there are people like him where you're like, yeah, where does that come from, though? Like, what gave you the impression that you were worthy of, like, that much? No. He thinks of himself, he sees himself in a way the world does not.
Yes. There's got to be a level, I feel like, of narcissism.
Because
it's one thing, like, to go up to a guy like Boyd and be like, yeah, man, hey, it's great to meet you, and I believe in the stuff that you preach. It's another thing to say, you and me are the same.
Mm-hmm.
We feel the same way. We know the same things. That definitely takes a level of self-interest that
And to is call people disposable yes. just implies that you're just more important than them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Boyd has been willing to leave bodies and leave casualties, but I never really got the impression that he genuinely thought he was more important than other people. Not but really.
But I think that's also the core of racism, which
that's for
Boyd
sure.
wasn't. He just wanted to play into that so he'd have a bunch of flunkies.
Right.
Whereas this guy, it, you know, he apparently wholeheartedly believes in you know, and killing the Jews.
I don't think I've ever actually met a Jew in my life. That was one of my favorite lines, too.
Yeah.
Just like how he's just really like it's almost like he never stopped to think about it. He's already so consumed with like self-loathing and this like doubt. But then when this kid brings this part up and he's like, oh, yeah, another thing that was a complete lie about me. Like, it's just almost like he's a little bit. Oh, thanks for bringing that up. Now I have another thing to hate myself for.
Add that to my list. Throw that on the top of my daily 5 minutes hate.
Right.
But yeah, Boyd is in, he's in a weird, dangerous place right now.
Yeah, definitely. I would, if he winds up showing back up to the job, I'll be pretty surprised.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he's going back there. Not after this. I mean, the guy had like three dudes running out after him into the parking lot.
That's true.
I feel like he had people with him who know what happened, and nobody's going to be okay with that. But
Kyle has a posse.
I mean, maybe Boyd's just going to be like, you know what? You want to fight? Let's do this. Maybe he's just kind of like so nihilistic right now that he doesn't even care.
Nihilistic is exactly the right word.
We believe in nothing. but yeah, I'm saying I would be surprised if he goes back, because I'm thinking like me wanting, like having any self-preservation, but I'm actually, you know, if I'm thinking about what his headspace is, I wouldn't be surprised if he went back because he doesn't give a fuck.
Yes. Well, you know, I'll be honest. I find especially at this point that I like watching Raylan because... Do you watch Archer?
Yes.
Raylan has some Archer in him to me where he is so fucking good that he almost doesn't have to care.
Yep.
And that's enjoyable to watch.
Yep.
But Boyd is so much more compelling to me. I love just where he is. And I just, at this point, like, what the hell is he going to do? What will he do next? Because clearly right now he doesn't believe in much. He doesn't care about much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is such a compelling character right now.
I totally see what you mean. I think that, like, Boyd, in terms of a complex character, is definitely, I don't even want to say more complex than Raylan in terms of, like, feeling like a real person, but he's obviously much more conflicted than Raylan, which is interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But I just love watching Raylan get put in his place over and over again. Because he's so good, like, it's just so... Like I said, what Winona said, that was really mean. But also, haha, fuck you, Raylan. Like,
well, it's also part of the reason art is so much fun to watch.
Exactly.
He just enjoys being in charge of Raylan.
What is it he says? He's like, you're a thrill a minute. We should sell tickets.
Yes. but that's it. I know. I enjoy watching Raylan all the time. But it, at this point, Boyd to me is such a fascinating character for me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is at this real crossroads.
And it really is something that you don't see often when there's like a character. Because when I started Justified, I rarely watch shows where the main protagonist is as good as Raylan is.
Yeah.
And usually if the protagonist is this good, it's sort of flat.
Mm-hmm.
And feels really, like, uninteresting. But they managed to be like, oh, no, he's super, super good at his job. It's just literally everything else. And it's the kind of thing that I feel like a lot of shows try and do. They're like, oh, he's a great cop, but he's an alcoholic or, you know, fucking whatever. But the fact that he really isn't, like, that kind of cliched self-destructive...
Yeah.
It's a much more slow burn. It's less obvious. And once you meet his dad, the motivation is so clear. And the fact that he wouldn't be as grotesquely self-destructive in an obvious way as, like, you know, being a functional alcoholic, it's just with who he is, it just makes a lot of sense. So I just commend them for being able to write a character who is like a total badass, but also like kind of a mess and not in like a, oh, he's seen so much kind of mess, you know, like he's hard boiled and he ever come back from this? It's like a whole other type of thing.
The trap is, I've mentioned before, Battlestar Galactica is one of my favorite shows. It's mm-hmm. very flawed, but it's one of my favorites. And Starbuck in that show mm-hmm. is such a fun, badass character for like the first half of the first season. And then she gets mired down in all of this sort of heavy character development, love triangle, depression, self-destruction
yeah.
stuff. And that's the temptation. When you want to flesh out a character, you want to make them complicated and deep and brooding. And it can sap all the fun out mm-hmm. of someone who used to be a joy to watch. And I agree. I like the way that they've written Rael, that he is complex, but he doesn't have to be broadly dramatic in order to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having him, he's essentially fighting the same battle that Boyd is, in a way, because he had, like, you know, Boyd obviously has some rage. Mm-hmm. And Winona calls Raylan the angriest man she's ever known. They have some of the same, like, urges, I think. It's just that Raylan has a very regular and sanctioned outlet. And Boyd doesn't have anything like that.
Interesting.
You know?
Okay.
So I feel like Boyd could have done pretty well probably as law enforcement if he had been in a, you know, born into a family that actually, I mean, I want to say gave a shit about the law, but Raylan's dad didn't give a shit about the law and he still did it, so.
Well, there is that. I mean, it's a cliche, but there is that idea. Well, season 6 of Lost with Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
where you see Sawyer where he says, you know, there was just a point in my life where I was either going to become a cop or a criminal. So I became a cop.
Oh, I forgot about that line.
And I think that that is true of, I don't want to say many people in law enforcement, but it's certainly true of a personality type that is in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, it said, I definitely think Raylan and Boyd, again, they dug coal together. They started out in the same place.
Yeah.
Raylan could very easily be Boyd, and Boyd could very quite possibly be Raylan.
Oh, man, can you imagine? I'm just picturing Raylan as, like, like making this kind of, like, growl scream as he's dragging somebody along, and I'm like, yeah, that's not hard to picture.
Honestly, no. Yeah. So that is episode 3.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Eye of the Storm.
You know, I wanted to ask, what the hell does that mean?
I don't remember.
Because I'm like, I was kind of paying attention for it in the episode and thinking that, you know, there's going to be a thing. And I don't get it. And it's spelled I, like the letter. I.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually meant to look this up before we started, because the first time I saw this episode, I said, that doesn't make any sense. And I think I looked it up and figured out why it is called that.
Oh, yeah?
And I didn't get a chance to do that before this episode.
Boo. So, Boo!
I know. I'm a bad trivia master. I gave myself the title of trivia master. But let me see if IMDb tells me anything.
While you're doing that, I'm going to pull up the newest patrons and say hello to all of them.
And while you're doing that, I just want to mention IMDb's plot keywords for this episode include drugs, murder, reference to eBay, buying a hat, and bus ride.
Nice. All right.
Let's see here.
So those of you who don't know, which I assume that you probably do, but assumptions are never good, usually. Patreon is the way that I am able to do so many podcasts. It is basically crowdsourcing, and people who really enjoy the podcasts and what I do contribute monthly to help me stay full-time and solely focused on doing this. And it is the only way that I'm able to do as many. I mean, this week I have 12 shows that I'm going to be posting. I do a lot. And it is the only podcast that I have seen out there that does not have a tiered reward system, which means that you can pledge $1 and get the same access and benefits as somebody who pledges $100. And yes, I do have one person pledging $100 a month, and he is a goddamn saint. But I just really understand what it's like to not be, you know, able to pledge as much as you want to and still be a huge fan of the show. And I really, you know, I wanted to have it be accessible and focus on building a community more than anything. And I think that's working. So this week I got a bunch of new pledges. I think mostly because the exclusive content right now for patrons is my reviews with Anton and Miles on Game of Thrones, which we're playing a game in which Miles does not watch the show, but Anton and I make up quizzes to ask him as we record, and we present three different scenarios and he has to figure out which one actually happened and which ones we made up. Which is super, super fun to do. And yeah, I've been getting a lot of good responses from it. Those of you who really love the show Game of Thrones may not love the podcast because I'm kind of hard on it. But this episode that just aired last weekend and the one that we just recorded on the weekend before that were both good episodes. So the show has been on a bit of an uptick, and I'm hoping it stays that way. But yeah, I just wanted to let you all know about it. It's patreon.com/unspoiled. Like I said, as much as you want per month. And the Game of Thrones thing is what's exclusive now, along with Civil War, which I'm recording live on camera on Saturday nights. And that is also patrons only. And you can show up and watch me, Owen, and Maggie. And depending on the night, Stephen Atwell or Miles, or it might just be the three of us. And you can ask questions on the chat and get involved in the conversation. It's really fun. And we had also done Age of Ultron and the Star Wars movies and everything. There is a lot of bonus content if you become a patron. So with that said, hello to my new patrons. We have James, Lavinia, Rachel, Usainu, I hope I'm saying right, John, Diseth, Susan, Mary, Ola Tunigi, Mary Mendoca in this one. There's two Marys. Jessica, Brandon, Emma, Sally, Michelle, and Julia. So welcome to all of you lovely, delightful people.
Hi, everybody.
I hope that you have been enjoying the bonus stuff, especially the Game of Thrones episodes. I had one person who was pretty disappointed in the Game of Thrones one because I don't like the show. But other than that one person, I've gotten mostly really positive feedback. So I think it's doing... I think people are agreeing with us.
It's entertaining, but it's not the show people expect unless they know ahead of time what it's going
to
be.
Right, exactly. It's what I have to make adjustments to the format of Unspoiled if I'm not a huge fan of the material. It's just something that I'm learning as I go on. And like I said, the show is turning out to be much better this season than I had expected, but that first premiere episode was a real worry. So, and it's not resolved yet. So, we'll see. We also have one new review. Five stars by Avery Bean, Strong Brew. Familiar with Unspoiled from their wonderful in-depth breakdown of A Song of Ice and Fire. Happy to see the Unspoiled think tank covering Justified. Even better, just beginning season 2. This is the knockout season from a solidly terrific show, like Wire season 4 terrific. Looking forward to the fun of Natasha getting familiar with Matriarch Mags and the extended Bennett clan, admonishing Raylan for his honorable but reckless actions, and figuring out what Boyd's trying not to say while saying a whole lot. That's a very good way to put that. Bound to be fun, like adding whiskey to your morning coffee. If you bring the grinds, I'll bring the Maker's Mark. Nice. Oh, I like.
Thank you, Avery Bean.
I like Avery Bean's name, and like, you know, thinks of, makes you think of coffee bean, and then they end it with a coffee analogy. Well done.
I like his style.
So yeah, thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it. It's always fun to see that we've got a new review.
That's awesome.
Is there anything you wanted to add, sir, please?
I did find, while looking up the Eye of the Storm, I didn't find any specific trivia, but I found what I must have figured out before. I found two things. I found a book called The Eye of the Storm, that the subtitle is Embracing Conflict, Creating Peace, and another, story or an article of some kind called The Eye of the Storm, Understanding the Suicidal Mind.
Oh.
And I think if you look at the Eye of the Storm, it's the letter I, the person in the center of the conflict.
Yeah.
So I think that is very, very apt. Just a little, just doesn't jump right out at you immediately. So I like it.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. I like it too. Now that I have had it explained to me, I really just did not get it, you know?
That's, you know, and I specifically mentioned it because I wanted to talk about the title. It occurred to me right at that moment. I'm like, I hadn't asked her what she thought the title meant because it blew right by me too. So
yeah.
Hooray for research.
And
critical thinking.
I feel like there was something that I wanted to expand on with that, but now I've lost it. Damn. Oh, well, I got nothing. Anything else that you wanted to add, sir?
No, it's, you know, people, of course, as always, you can follow me at Al Kingsley on Twitter. I am on the Unspoiled Clubhouse. I am on the Game of Thrones spoiler chat. And I am here every week.
Awesome. I am here. Yeah, guys, you can also follow me at Unspoiled Show on Twitter, facebook.com/unspoiledpod on Facebook. And, oh, there's another one. What is it? Oh, Unspoiled Podcast on Instagram, where I post a combination of official show stuff and behind the scenes I'm recording or making my schedule stuff, which I'm sure is not that exciting, but some people think it's exciting. So I'll tell you about it.
I did see your new stamp collection set that you wanted to get. That was pretty interesting.
I am so excited about that stamp set. Guys, okay. I don't know how many people know this, but I'm obsessed with my planner because I have 1,000 things to keep track of. And I found this fucking stamp set that's all about like TV. And they even have a new podcast one because it's like a set. And so they have podcast. They have one that says record. They have edit. They have premiere or finale. They have little icon of a television and popcorn and... I mean, it could not be more fucking perfect. So,
and I will tell you, without a trace of irony, there are a few things as gratifying to me as being able to stamp something.
Really?
So I love stamping stuff. Absolutely.
This is going to be my first stamp set. So, and apparently planner stamping is like a pretty big deal because the common thing for like using the planners the way that I do is printing stickers. But you use a ton of ink from your printer. And you have to buy a sticker paper. So for me, the stamps seem like way more economical.
Sure.
But yeah, I've never owned a set. And it's like it's the clear block so that you can see where you're placing it on the page and everything. So I'm pretty excited about it. And I also got one for reading. And it's got like a page count stamp and books on a shelf and all different library. And then there's another one that's all social media icons and like posting and blog stuff. So that's my little haul that I'm getting. I'm trying to get myself like one like treat per month. Okay. And kind of restrict myself to that because of money issues. And yeah, those stamps are my big treat for myself because it's a new set. I had to buy the ink and everything to go with it. So it was kind of expensive, but
nice.
But thanks for bringing it up, Alan.
No, absolutely. And dear listeners, if you found that interesting, I mean that without a trace of irony, then you should subscribe to Natasha's Instagram feed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I put a lot of planner stuff on there. That's like all it is. That and like flowers and ice cream is pretty much the entire thing, which is I'm at... The Glamour Junkie, GLAMOUR, spelled in the British style, Junkie. Yeah, good call. Thanks, Alan.
You're welcome.
all right, guys. Well, I hope that you all enjoyed the show, and we will see you next week with a new episode. Bye, guys.
Bye.
On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, lonesome. Fighting for my soul, God get at you, boy. You try to go hard, fall back, I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, lonesome.
I see them all, hard times to come.
My life is hell, son, compared to kill, son. A paradox of pain, baby, it's real, son. Lonely traveler.